Hey everyone, I'm Christina and this is the Broke Girl Society podcast. Thank you so much for listening in. I really should do a blooper reel because sometimes it takes me like 10 times just to do this little clip right before the episode. But let's see if we can make it through this one. So today's episode, we have Karina Lucid, who is a bankruptcy attorney out of New Jersey. And she has graciously agreed to come on and talk about bankruptcy with me. This is a topic that can be a little taboo in some 12-step circles, and I get it, you know, with bankruptcy and finances and gambling addiction. Like, you know, there's all this about starting, you know, wiping the slate clean, but also paying amends. And so I thought it'd be great just to have a conversation and just talk about bankruptcy, the options of bankruptcy. And I think it's up for everybody to decide what's right for themselves and what they need to do to get back on track financially, maintain, you know, their financial health, and also be able to navigate recovery in a way where it's not stacked against them. So I think this was a really good conversation. She has a lot of great facts and wisdom. And we talked too about, you know, different aspects of lending and credit and things like that. So hopefully this is a helpful episode to you, and you can check out Karina's website at karinalucidlaw.com. You can find more information there if you're in the New Jersey. I was going to say if you're in the New Jersey area, you know, that's why this takes me 10 times to do this, because I say things like that. But if you live in New Jersey, you can contact her and she could assist you on debt relief options. But other than that, you know, every state kind of has their own regulations that line up with the federal guidelines of bankruptcy. So check your state's information if bankruptcy is part of your plan. So, all right, well, let's roll. Oh, I got to give my shout out to Gamban. Wonderful company, wonderful people. If you're struggling with online gambling or know somebody who is, go to gamban.com, download that software. Some of the states offer Gamban for free for a year. So if that's something you're interested in, reach out to me at Christina@thebrokegirlsociety.com. I will check and see if the state offers that option for you. I think it's roughly $34 a year. Lord knows we spent more money gambling in 30 minutes than it would take you to put that barrier on your phone, on your devices, and stop the bleeding. So, all right, well, let's roll on into this episode. I hope you enjoy. So welcome, Karina. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us about bankruptcy.
Thank you so much, Christina, for having me on. Broke Girl Society is a fantastic platform. I've read and listened to some of your other podcasts, and it's really great stuff. I appreciate what you're doing for your community and for all of us.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Okay, so let's talk about this, because one of the most common issues coming into recovery is finances. And I know for myself, and I even hear 16 months in recovery, finances are still very overwhelming for me. There's still a lot of stuff that I'm still working through, navigating. And one of the things that was on my list when I first entered recovery is I looked into Chapter 13 bankruptcy. I knew that I didn't qualify for 7. And, you know, there was a part of me that kind of wanted to pay my, make sure that I went into like a payment program as a way to work a recovery for me. I haven't quite like settled on anything yet, but I just would love to hear more about how bankruptcy can be, or debt relief can be beneficial for somebody who is coming into recovery and really struggling with debt.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your openness and for that question. I think there's a few hurdles that people deal with, especially in a recovery situation, because there's a lot of guilt that and sort of, you know, moral notions that can come along with the idea of getting relief from a debt that you entered into. You know, I mean, you made that agreement. You took a loan from somebody. You, you know, there's a lot of struggle with, you know, the idea of not having to pay that back. So I want to kind of sort of first take that apart, deconstruct it a little bit, and maybe dispel some of the myths and give people a little bit of relief from their own self-imposed guilt, right? And the guilt coming from all around us. People talk so much, right? I want to first start by saying there's several different options, right? So you can do a debt settlement type of program where you can negotiate settlements. And there's also the option of a Chapter 13, like you had mentioned, if you don't qualify for a Chapter 7. A Chapter 13 is a repayment plan. It is a structured repayment over the course of 3 to 5 years. You're not shirking your responsibilities. You are legitimately and fairly paying what you're able to pay. And it's wonderful because it gives you the breathing space. It stops any harassing phone calls. It stops the pressure, you know. And I think that, you know, when you're in recovery, that emotional struggle is so real that just getting that relief and having the time. And I will tell you, I have a lot of clients that pay their actual debt off in full through a Chapter 13, but they get 3 to 5 years to do it. They get the break, right? So that breathing room, that peace of mind is just huge in and of itself. And, you know, I was talking to you a little earlier, and I was telling you a story about one of my favorite stories was a young woman who came to me. She had taken about $17,000 in loans from, you know, very usurious lending companies. And as soon as she fell into default, her interest rates just compounded exponentially. And she was looking at on the different notes between like 6% and 760% interest. And when she did the number crunching and the calculations, and she realized it was going to take her more than 20 years to pay off that $17,000, and she was going to pay well in excess of $100,000. And she came to me because she was like, this is just not possible. I can't do it. And I said, you know, you don't have to. You can, in good conscience, pay the $17,000 that you owe in, you know, and in her case, it was a 3-year plan because of her income and because of her assets. So she had it was a beautiful, beautiful case because she paid what she owed without any pressure and without this onerous interest that really shouldn't have even been legal, in my opinion. Right. So, the other option, of course, is the Chapter 7. And, you know, legitimately, people get into a struggle for reasons that they can't control. And when they want to get out of that struggle, getting the relief of a Chapter 7, if they qualify for it, and getting that debt wiped out can be a tremendous step in the direction of rebuilding. And, you know, it's all about getting a fresh start. You go into recovery and you don't want to come out, you know, unable to breathe because you're crushed by a financial burden. You know, I mean, and that's just going to further destroy your health and your psychological well-being. It's not worth it. I actually had a client who was extremely reluctant to do a Chapter 7. And I put her into a Chapter 13 because she wanted to repay her debt. And we structured it in a way that we thought she was going to be able to handle. And about a year into her Chapter 13 case, she finally realized that it just wasn't viable. Her credit wasn't rehabilitating the way that she had hoped it would. She was still paying money and just not getting any real benefit. And she was crushed. So we converted her to a Chapter 7. And within 3 months, her credit score was up to a 711. And she texted me one day because, you know, now her credit was clean, right? And we'll talk more about the credit score question in a little bit. But she texted me, my credit score is a 711 for the first time since I can remember. And then she said, hashtag chapter seven is heaven. You know, really, I think we need to be accepting of ourselves. We need to be forgiving of ourselves. And, you know, when we talk about forgiveness, it's not just forgiveness of others, right? And I think the hardest person to forgive is me. And I don't know if your listeners are religious people, but our country was structured on Judeo-Christian principles, right? So I'll say from the spiritual perspective, first of all, God said in the Bible that we should give ourselves a break and give each other a break. I'll read you a quick quote from Deuteronomy. It's Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 1 and 2. It says, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release of debts. And this is the form of release. So God actually gives us a prescribed formula, right? He says, this is the form of release. Every creditor who has lent anything to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not require it of his neighbor or his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. And, you know, up until 2005, our country's bankruptcy system permitted a Chapter 7 debt relief every 7 years. This is exactly why, right? The principles that were the foundational principles of our country were based on these principles from the Bible. Now, it's not just altruistic, it's not just spiritual, it's also practical. Congress knows that for you to be a productive member of society, for you to be a consumer, buying things, paying taxes, doing all the things that Congress wants you to do to keep the engine of our government running, you have to be able to financially breathe, right? So it's not just about, you know, you and your creditor, it's about the whole system. So when you think about the possibility of, you know, debt relief, whether you're filing a bankruptcy or doing a debt settlement program or whatever, you know, I would say the one core thing is don't let yourself get bogged down by the sense of guilt or moral reprehensions that some people talk about, that you might be hearing those voices in your head. You know, they're not voices. Yeah, absolutely. That are,
and I think a lot of the confusion
for your best interest
for people,
and you need to be able gambling to addiction and you need specifically to be able to look out bankruptcy for what's or debt your best interest
is, you know, a lot of the 12-step programs
get back on
you know
feet.
Their principles are kind of I know in my first meeting when they talked about bankruptcy, you know, that it was frowned upon because, you know, as part of the recovery process, making amends and paying your debt is a form of amends. Also, another struggle with, you know, that kind of is in conflict with people who are struggling with gambling is wiping the slate clean and whether or not that will trigger another episode or another, like, trigger us back into addiction. And so that's always, I think, in the back of people's mind too, is when bankruptcy and debt relief are talked about in gambling recovery. I think for me, you know, if you're in a program of recovery and you're doing well in recovery and you're working on those things that triggered my symptoms of, you know, triggered my symptoms, which was gambling. Gambling was a symptom of internal problems for me. And so I feel as long as I'm continuing a plan of recovery and I'm continuing to work on myself, that if, you know, bankruptcy was an option I needed to maintain moving forward in my recovery, I would wholeheartedly and may wholeheartedly do it. And so I think that's where a lot of the conflict is, you know, some of these programs that have been around, you know, since the late 50s that is most associated with gambling addiction recovery has kind of frowned upon it. And so that's where a lot of the stigmatism comes in as well. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
I will say, first of all, it's interesting because I never thought about the timeline, but when the 12-step programs really were developed, and they're beautiful, very worthwhile programs, when they were developed, you know, we had a totally different mindset about credit. And if you look at that time period, credit cards virtually didn't exist. When you had lending, it was a face-to-face. There was a person. There was a sort of moral union, right? You went to your banker and you sat down and you did paperwork and you made, you know, promises, and you didn't take out much loans at all. Interest was completely different structure. You know, when you look at that and you look at in context with what the 12 steps provide and making amends, you have to also realize that making amends is with people, not institutions. And I think that's sort of a misunderstanding that a lot of people have about things like credit card debt, you know, or, you know, LendingTree or whatever, right? I mean, these are institutions. These are businesses structured to make as much money off of interest and fees as possible. And they have built into their business model a certain amount of money that they're going to lose because they know that they are charging onerous rates. And so they're structuring it this way. They're not the person sitting across the table from you that's going to, you know, work with you and care. There's a whole different moral profile to the person that the 12-step program says you should be making amends with. You know, that's your mom or your wife or, you know, a person who you actually had an individual interpersonal relationship with. It's not an institution that you need to make amends with. And I think that's the first thing that, you know, we should really consider when we're, you know, thinking about how hard we really want to be on ourselves as we're trying to recover, right?
One thing I do want to mention is, you know, gambling addicts or people with problem gambling or whatever they want to consider themselves as somebody who's struggling with gambling, we're extremely susceptible to predatory loans because, you know, like that's usually once our credit starts to take a hit or we start to max out our what's available to us at the decent interest rates, then we're stuck with these higher interest rates and these predatory loans and things because we'll do anything to get money to gamble. So we'll agree to pay any price to gamble. And I think that's another thing that a lot of people need to look at too, is that there are people that prey on people like us who will do anything to get the money we need to feed our habit. So I think it's important that people hear that and understand that too, you know, as far as when they're making those considerations, because I can talk to, I don't know how many a day who fell prey to the payday loans. I myself fell prey to them. Or the short-term loans with the 300% interest, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, those are the things that really, I think, impact a lot of us when it comes to gambling recovery and finances.
Yeah. You know, that's a great, wow. I mean, you just said it so well. I mean, and it is called predatory lending for a reason, right? I mean, and you look at, you know, the old, all the old works, all the classics, you know, I mean, look at The Merchant of Venice, Shakespeare, one of Shakespeare's greatest works, certainly one of my favorites. You know, I mean, what was the whole core there was because the, you know, Shylock was lending at usurious rates and he was brought to trial for it. You know, I mean, it's kind of insane to torture ourselves to sort of allow usurious predatory lenders to take advantage of the system and the, you know, shame on them. And sometimes it's okay to just say, you know, I can't do this anymore. And I'm sorry that I got tricked into an agreement that was heavily leveraged against me. but that's not my fault. You took advantage of a person in a very, very vulnerable place. And I'm allowed to step off, and I'm allowed to rebuild, you know? And I was thinking about, you know, one of the other things that you had mentioned about the origins of 12-step programs, right? And I thinking about it, you know, being in the late 1940s, early 1950s, you know, the first written codified bankruptcy laws that were just, you know, a bankruptcy code in and of itself as a standalone set of laws was published by Congress in 1978. And I think it's very telling when you see how our society has transitioned with the use of credit in that time. You know, we were talking before about, you know, that one-on-one interpersonal relationship with a lender. And I think, you know, Congress saw a lot of things happening, and you know, we can all say Congress has done many things wrong, but Congress also has, you know, is a body of human beings. And, you know, so Congress does have a conscience, and we're looking at an income tax liability that was supposed to have been temporary and was a war relief tool, right? Well, they didn't want to get rid of it because now the country needed it. So what could we do to make it so that we could keep charging income tax at the federal level, and also keep people being productive spenders? And at the end of the day, I mean, why does everybody think that we got all the stimulus money during the pandemic? People were paid to stay home, and they got forgiveness of their obligation to pay their rent and their mortgage. What were they getting money for? So that they could be consumers. They were getting money so they could spend money so businesses wouldn't close down. Because at the end of the day, that's what makes our government work. That's what makes, you know, everything able to keep running. That's what makes all of the public services able to keep running. That's what makes the military able to keep running. We need to be able to put money into the system. And, right. You know, so in 1978, that was the first time that, you know, I mean, bankruptcy has always been an option in this country, but it became a very structured option. And as you know, you look back on all of these issues that we have with that struggle, right? And, you know, you were talking about, you know, that concern about being able to rebuild after wiping the slate clean, and the fear that maybe having a clean slate would cause people to, you know, to revert back to old habits that were not good for them. But at the same time, you know, once you're there and you have hit your bottom, you're either going to fall back into the habit or you're not, right? And you can just as easily say that I might get tempted to start gambling again because I can't afford the debt still.
Very true, yes.
You know, so we're looking at all of those angles. And, you know, anybody who struggles with it also can look at, you know, there's been a number of different changes in the bankruptcy code from 1978 through, you know, even 2018 was the last big revision. But in 2005, there was a huge overhaul of the bankruptcy code. And it was basically a restructuring of the bankruptcy code that made it a lot harder to qualify for bankruptcy and a lot harder to get the relief offered by bankruptcy. And that's because, you know, our social norms have changed, and it is, you know, a lot easier now for people to say, I want to wipe my slate clean, you know? So there's protections in there for those institutions And, you know, the creditors, most creditors in a bankruptcy are institutions. Most of the time it's not, you know, mom and pop. It's not like, you know, even, my gosh, the dentist, the orthodontist, right? The chiropractor. I can't tell you how often my clients want to try to keep those debts out of their bankruptcy. And I have to tell them, look, bankruptcy doesn't allow you to cherry pick. We get forgiveness of all of the debts, or we restructure all of the debts, you know, whether you're doing a payment plan or a Chapter 7 and just liquidating the debt and wiping it out. But people will still do like a payment plan on a debt that has been forgiven because they do have a relationship with that person. Because they want to continue going to that dentist, or, you know, or their kids are not done getting, you know, braces, and they want to continue going to the orthodontist. Well, yeah, maybe they don't have an obligation to finish paying that, but they will. And I think that's very telling, you know, when you talk about like human nature and, you know, the structure of debt forgiveness and this whole concept, right? It's about people. And when we get lost in, you know, these predatory lending schemes and we kind of just, we kind of, you know, overburden ourselves with somehow all of the misinformation on the internet that tells us that we should protect those guys, it's just harming ourselves and doing a disservice to ourselves. I mean, I tell my clients all the time, that information that you get on the internet is designed to do what's best for those lending institutions, not what's best for you.
Yeah.
You know? And so when they tell you, oh, bankruptcy is going to destroy your credit forever, and, you know, it makes you a bad person, and who's that good for? That is good for the credit card company. Only the credit card company, and they're going to end up charging you. I always do an interest rate calculation for my clients. And actually, that young woman that I was telling you about, her case was probably 5-6 years ago, but she was the one that kind of opened my eyes to it. When she had come to me and she said, when I calculated how much I was going to have to pay these people, and I really looked at the interest calculation, I realized I just couldn't do it, right? So I have started doing an interest calculation for all of my clients to, you know, just to show them, this is what you're going to pay if you don't let yourself be forgiven of this contract.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. It kind of opens their eyes to that part of it. There's a whole nother part of this though, that we can talk about. If somebody is struggling with whether or not to step into this, or they're worried that having the clean slate might send them back to addiction. You know, there's always options of financial therapists and you know, programs and things to kind of help them learn to have a better relationship with money going forward. And one of the things that you like to talk about and address is credit rehabilitation. And that's a big part of you know, now I think of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because it is super important to understand. So I have people literally every day that call me for debt relief services because they are actually looking for something like a debt consolidation plan or something like that. And they want, you know, a local attorney to handle it because they trust someone local more. And I thank God when they call me, because most of the time, a debt consolidation program would be the worst thing those people can do. Because here's how it works. When you are looking at your credit score, okay, there are certain critical factors. One is your income to debt ratio. And the other is your credit utilization, okay? there's other factors. There's like, you know, five key factors. But those two are the biggest, and combined they make up almost 70% of your credit score. Just those two factors, okay? Now, when you think about what those mean, okay, so first of all, your income to debt ratio. When you look at how much debt you have compared to how much income you have, if you are in a situation where your income to debt ratio is upside down and you have more debt than you can afford to service, right? And you try to get out of that by doing an out-of-court repayment plan, a debt consolidation, any of those types of things, right? What happens is, first of all, you have to go into default to get into those plans. So all these people, and I have all the time, people say, I'm not behind on any of my payments. I make my minimum monthly payment every month religiously. Well, they're running up interest and that debt is growing. So their income to debt ratio is most of the time getting worse as they make minimum payments and feel like they're doing the right thing. Okay. And then to get relief through a debt consolidation type of program, you have to let them go into default, right? So now it's even worse because now there's fees, compounding interest, and most of the credit card companies, banks, et cetera, they require you to be in default for a minimum of 3 months. Most of them, it's 6 months, but the minimum is 3 months, right? Before they will even talk to you about a settlement. Once they talk to you about a settlement, they'll be talking to you about either a lump sum, which you'd have to have access to cash for, or they might be talking to you about, you know, a restructured payment plan. Some of them are looking at, you know, Chapter 13 as something that they don't want people getting into. So they will actually do a little bit of an income and expense analysis, and they might give you a reduced amount to pay over a period of time. And that sounds great, right? But first of all, a debt consolidation program is not going to get you something like that. They will escrow money until they have a lump sum to pay a settlement. All the time that they are doing that and setting that money aside for you, you run the risk of being a subject of lawsuits, wage garnishments, bank levies. None of that is stopped. Okay. If you do the out-of-court type of settlement plan without a Chapter 13 and you get, you know, a good deal like that from your credit card company or your lender, sometimes the risk of that is that without the bankruptcy, you don't have all of your creditors obligated to those terms, just one or two. So without realizing it, you are still putting yourself in jeopardy with regard to lawsuits and all of those things, collections, harassing calls, all that stuff, right? Now, in the meantime, your income to debt ratio is still not being cured. That is the thing that, you know, the first thing that a bankruptcy can really help with. Because, you know, especially if you can do Chapter 7 is heaven, especially if you can get rid of, you can wipe out the debt, right? Then all of a sudden, people get so surprised because they're like, oh, I got a credit card offer like right after my bankruptcy. That's because all of a sudden your income to debt ratio is super healthy and your credit score. So I like to do this thing with my clients because most people don't believe me and people listening to this show right now probably don't believe me. So what I do is I have to pull a credit report in order to prepare a bankruptcy case, right? So I pull the credit report and then when their case is done, I pull another credit report and I invite them into the office and I sit down with them at my conference table to talk about the process. And then I slide those two documents across the table and I say, look where you were and look where you are now. And invariably, the credit score post-bankruptcy is higher. So now it doesn't work quite as fast in a Chapter 13 because you are on a repayment plan and your income to debt ratio is not being cleaned up the same way as a Chapter 7. But you're still getting all the relief from everything else. And if you stay on plan in a Chapter 13, in 2 years, you become absolutely eligible for all conventional lending, even mortgages, because you're on plan, you're showing good rehabilitative credit worthiness and all that stuff. Now, here's the other side of it. A lot of times, and totally understandable, respect where this is coming from, people are terrified of ever getting any lending again. And then they wonder why their credit score isn't going up. They're like, I'm not taking out any loans. I don't have any credit cards, right? My credit score is still terrible. So they feel like the process didn't help. And sometimes people will even blame the bankruptcy for that. But what happens is, in order to have a good credit score, you have to have some credit. So that's why you'll see a lot of times, you know, like I tell people, if they're renting, to try to get into an apartment complex or a condo that has a property manager. Because when they have that kind of system and they're a bigger company, they will typically report your rent payments. That's something that can help rebuild your credit utilization. There's okay. Also, you know, your car. If you can afford to lease a car or finance a car, that's a good, healthy way to have a monthly payment that will rebuild your credit. The other thing that I highly recommend is to get what we call a secured credit card. You open just a separate bank account. I usually recommend that it's in a separate bank altogether, completely apart from your other accounts, and have a credit card that is just that you use just linked to that account. And so it's secured by the money in that account. But it will help to rebuild your credit score because you are utilizing credit. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, little tips and tricks, and actually I would highly recommend, you know, people really looking at debt repair type of learning. I did a workshop that I turned into just a video for my clients so that when they're working with us, they can listen to it. It's a 1 hour and 10 minute long workshop where I go through all the elements of your credit score and how credit reports work and how what people can do for themselves to rebuild, either with a bankruptcy or without. So, you know, because it's not intuitive, right? Like you think if I'm not using any credit, I should be credit worthy, but that's the opposite of how it works.
Right, right. And I think that's too, like for somebody like me, I wouldn't say I was financially responsible even before gambling. Like some of us just don't intuitively have the instincts to be financially smart or responsible. Like I'm talking for myself because I have a twin sister who is the complete opposite. She has always been financially on target and goals and things like that. And so I think, you know, finances have always been kind of an issue for me. But as we're kind of winding down here, I just want to ask you some kind of questions that have like things that will help a bankruptcy will help with, kind of the things that I know myself have struggled with. I know that other people who are recovering from gambling addiction have struggled with. So if you have like, let's say you've been sued and you have judgments or repossessions or IRS debt. So how does a bankruptcy help with those things? I know they're different depending on which chapter you file. But like somebody like myself who has IRS debt, and am looking at bankruptcy, like how would you recommend that to go for the just those different things that kind of come up?
So I would say first and foremost, you should always consult a local bankruptcy attorney to make sure that you get your full financial profile looked at and analyzed before making any decision. Okay.
Great advice. Yes.
There's a lot of nuances. So, for example, just with IRS debt, okay? If your IRS debt is income tax debt and it's assessed more than 3 years ago, and you don't have any assets that can be liened, that may very well be forgivable. So if you were to file a Chapter 7 in a case like that, you could actually get forgiven of your IRS income tax liability. Now, it has to have all of those elements in exactly that structure. So if you have a house and there's a lien for your IRS debt, then that doesn't work. So you may consider a Chapter 13 and make your IRS debt part of your repayment plan. What's great about that is that if you have other debt, the IRS debt takes priority. So you're going to have to pay the IRS no matter what, whether you do it in an out-of-court payment plan with the IRS, which they're typically pretty generous about offering, or you do it in a Chapter 13 or whatever you do. You're basically going to have to pay your IRS debt, especially if it's secured. If there's a federal tax lien and they have assets that they can lean on, then there's pretty much no way around it. And the bankruptcy code requires that kind of debt to be paid first. So instead of fighting with credit card companies and, you know, sometimes, you know, people have a medical debt that they don't think was properly assessed, that insurance didn't cover and doctors didn't file paperwork right and all this other stuff. So that IRS debt would be paid ahead of any of those other obligations, and it makes it much more manageable. It again, it gives you breathing room. That's what it's designed for. It gives you peace of mind, and it pays off the obligation that you can't get rid of, right?
Right.
Other debts like judgments, and again, that's gonna vary depending upon the type of judgment. You know, was it an Amber Heard type judgment for a willful and malicious injury like defamation? Well, then that's probably not going to be dischargeable, right? But in Chapter 13, you might at least be able to get partial relief of it. And, you know, then there's state by state different laws for all different kinds of judgments that will be treated differently. And then, you know, there's most of your judgments, you know, if it's a collections judgment for a credit card debt or something like that, that's going to be forgivable in a bankruptcy. And, you know, if you do a Chapter 13 and you end up only being able to afford to pay 50% of your debt over the course of your plan, that remaining 50% will be forgiven. So, you know, there's a lot of different moving parts in a bankruptcy. It's very complex, but it is all designed to give you relief to the extent that Congress thinks is appropriate. And I think that should be sort of like, we're going back to the moral barometer, right? Let's let Congress be our moral barometer on that. <'Cause>, you know,
yeah.
Scary thought, but that's the way it's written.
It is. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I just want to say one other thing, just because leaving it on the note of Congress. When I was in law school, I was the only person in my class to get an A+ in tax law. And I am not a super smart person. I am not a math person. I am not an accounting person. I approached that test, and I will tell you, my study buddies were way smarter than me. I was studying with these two young women that were brilliant. One of them was the number 7 student in our class of like 500. She was brilliant. And I got higher scores than them in tax for one reason and one reason only. I had a business background and I looked at the exam in a different way from any of the college kids. When I wasn't sure about an answer, I said to myself, which is better for the federal government? And I chose that.
Interesting.
And so thinking about all these things coming full circle, Congress has as much as we may question it, Congress has reasons for the way that it structures things. So when I say let it be our moral barometer for whether or not bankruptcy is right, I'm not kidding. That they make the rules, and they make them for good reasons.
Right. And that's how we keep the world going round. Yep. Well, I appreciate your time so much, Karina. Thank you for coming on and sharing your expertise on debt relief and bankruptcy. And I know the people listening are going to find a lot of the tools and resources that you said very, very helpful. And again, I just really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I had a lot of fun being on your show. Thank you.
Thanks. And I'll also put in the show notes, you know, how somebody can get a hold of you if they're in your state and would like to learn more about debt relief and bankruptcy. So, awesome. All right.
Well, thank you so much. Take care.